Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, I don't have followers, I have family. How's it going?
I don't have followers, I have enemies?
Frenemies?
Frenemies. Can you work enemies into followers? I'm not sure.
Follow enemies?
And we're off the rails.
There we go.
Fast 7. Furious 7.
I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. I'll just say this. We talked about it. I had very high expectations going in. Unreasonably high expectations going in. Blown away. And just like wanted to make sure like I didn't get caught up too much. So I went and saw it Thursday night. Was just completely blown away by how well it was done. How good the action was. The stuff at the end. And then went and saw it again midday on Sunday. Still just as happy as the first time I saw it. Really well done. We'll have a Fast and Furious podcast at some point this week, I'm assuming. Trying to figure that out. But it's something where just a little spoiler into that podcast. I don't know that I need an eighth. I'm not sure that I want them to make an eighth.
Wow.
That's it was just kind of perfect.
Their response would be, that's funny, but
but we made $380 million this opening weekend.
$384 million worldwide, 143.6 domestic. The ninth all-time highest opening for a film belongs to the seventh Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah. And you got to think about, like, I think it's more impressive than the eight in front of it because they don't have that child audience tie-in that the other ones do. Like, there's the crazy Twilight teenagers and I guess some grown-ups that will go.
No, it's the Avengers, Iron Man 3, the final Harry Potter, two Dark Knight movies, two Hunger Games, and Spider-Man 3, which is unfortunate.
Whew, that's good marketing that Spider-Man 3 did that well. Okay, I guess the Dark Knight movies, I mean, there's a kid's tie-in because Batman is like a child comic book thing, and there's a lot of like...
I will say this, Fast and Furious, outside of its own fans, doesn't have a source material to build off of.
Right, yeah, that's ultimately my point. It's like you're capturing an entire audience.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't have that thing. But still, like, to be top 10, top 9 in opening, that's not bad. That's a good legacy.
You know, I hadn't seen 5 till this weekend.
Oh, really?
I'd never seen it.
I'd
seen all of them but 5, and then I sat down and caught it this weekend. And was like, these are great. Like these. But also, I saw John Wick, which also superb.
I love John Wick.
Yeah,
it's like a kind of a. To me, it was a more serious version of Shoot 'Em Up. It was like a darker version of Shoot 'Em Up to me, and I just loved it. Thought it was great.
Really love the action sequences. It did a really great job with the narrative action sequences. You know who else has done a great job with their narrative action sequences? The San Antonio Spurs.
Yo, they smoked the Warriors. I don't, you know me, I don't put much into regular season games and matchups, but they just smoked them. Like, just destroyed them in that game on Sunday.
Dan McCarney of the San Antonio Express News had a really good point. Pop would have never played starters in that game if he were the Golden State Warriors because... You have everything to gain by sitting them, which is you gain psychological advantage, because if they win, it's only because they didn't play starters, and if they lose, they lost to the B team. You rest up your guys, and you basically say, like, we're not going to emotionally invest ourselves in this contest. By playing the starters, like, the Warriors, I think, really did come in there, like, we can take on anybody, we can kick these guys' ass, too. And then to not only get beat... But to get, like, the Spurs tranked them, threw them up on a table, and dissected them. It was ugly.
It was, I mean, Kawhi Leonard is just, he's a good basketball player.
Ethan was talking about this, a good friend of the program, Ethan Sherwood Strauss, who can no longer appear, was talking about how...
He's dead to me.
what did you do?
Nothing, just that he can't appear anymore. Now he's dead to me.
That's why.
I went to his wedding and it was lovely and it was a beautiful night, but he's dead to me.
But he's dead to you. The debt has been repaid. So, but he was talking about how Kawhi's an all-star who's never made an all-star game. and how his stats really don't jump off the page at you. And I really take that away because it's like he had seven steals. I think he had 24, 27 points. I forget which one it was, but he had 20 plus points. His stat line looks good, but it's not like just bowl you over crazy. Wow. And then I realized just this morning, I was like, that's exactly like what Tim Duncan does.
Yeah.
Like that's exactly what Tim Duncan did for all those years, which is, you know, he had 26, 5, 3, 7. And like Duncan would have like 20, 26, 11, 4, 3. Like it's the exact same kind of lines. He is so much more physical now than he was. Like he has gained so much muscle in his body and he is just overpowering dudes right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to properly judge the matchup based on just how little we've seen it, but watching him try to score against Andre Iguodala, like, he made Iguodala kind of seem small.
Yeah.
And Iguodala's a big small dude. Forward. Like, he's a big small forward. And I found that to be pretty compelling. You know, he had the play where he picks Steph Curry and takes it the other way for the dunk, and that's the thing. Like he has that muscle, and he looks bigger, and he looks stronger. I kind of feel like he looks faster to me too.
Yeah,
I mean he really has that burst of speed just instantly off the turn. It's pretty. He's damn impressive.
And then the Warriors in every comic book or movie or whatever. Whenever the hero loses the powers and there's that extended sequence where they can't believe it for a far too long a time span.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, how could this be? It's like, well, okay, it's more unrealistic and crazy that you have these things. Like them going away, you already live in a world in which implausible things happen. It should be like, oh, this is bad. I should go. But that's how the Warriors kind of were. They were just shell-shocked that their shots weren't falling. Like, all the stuff that they normally put up just wasn't going down, and they weren't getting anything easy. Draymond Green, 2 of 11. Klay Thompson, 3 of 11. Those guys shot 5 of 22 from the field. Barnes, 2 of 7. They really put a lot of pressure on Harrison Barnes to beat him. You know, Curry was 9 of 17, but it felt like a quiet 9 of 17.
Yeah, looking at the player tracking numbers from NBA.com, 14 of 39 on uncontested shots. You know, just 35%. I mean, that's not Warriors like at all.
Right. And so you wonder, like, did they really just have a night when they just didn't hit anything?
Yeah, but that's also something where I don't know how we properly judge that either, cuz for a while I was just like, "Oh, they got good shots because they're uncontested." But you can't just look at that number and say, "Oh, well, they just missed shots they normally." Like you have to wonder and look deeper into it of, were they out of rhythm? Even though it's an open shot, was it out of rhythm because they're rushing against the Spurs defense? You know, like that's all stuff that I don't have an answer to, but that's the question that's starting to come up for me when looking at those numbers is it's possible they just missed shots. It's possible the Spurs rushed them into shots, even if they were open.
Did they run on the 3-point line and force them into pull-up jumpers off the dribble? Did they take away the inside and force them into short-range jumpers, which they're not great at? Like, you know. All those questions are in play there.
Yeah. Or was it just a crappy Sunday?
Might have just been a bad night.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I did wonder this. Like, they did lock up the number one overall seed the night before. And they've been running so high. So high.
They're on a 12-game win streak.
Yeah. Like, you want – and they were – like, the Suns game was really the one where I was like, this is unnecessary. Like, Phoenix desperately needed that game to keep their slim – pitiful playoff hopes alive.
Oh, man.
And the Warriors come back from 5 down inside of 2 minutes and just destroyed their soul.
You know that like in all those cartoons where like a mouse or something gets flung against the wall and then it just slowly slides down the wall? Like, that's what it's been like watching the Suns in the second half of the season.
And I thought Kerr's response yesterday was pretty good because Kerr was, you know, he didn't sugarcoat it. He didn't say like, well, you know, we just missed shot. Like, Kerr was like, that is what we have to get to.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's really, and somebody said this, like, that's a good thing that this happened to them because, you know, if you go into the playoffs thinking that you're going to be able to run and just, like, everything's going to be easy the way it is in the regular season, it will not be easy.
Well, yeah.
Like, the Warriors are going to have hard games. They'll have some where they just completely annihilate teams, but especially that first round series versus the Thunder is going to be ugly. But, you know, second round on, there are going to be teams that are going to come in and they're going to have, like, they're going to feel like we can win this game and they're going to do everything they can to get it.
Well, isn't that kind of a good counter to the point about, oh, Pop would have never played those guys in that situation? Is for Kerr, it's, yeah, we may get blown out, and that can be a little bit of a confidence deflator. But at the same time, you need to see what the goal is.
Well, like, I think getting your confidence deflated is a good thing. I've seen way too many teams roll through the regular season. You know what I started to think about in that Suns game when they came back and they didn't need this win and they did it and they're laughing and everyone's having fun. It's just like, we're just so great. I kept thinking of the 2009 Cavs. That's who I kept thinking about, who used to do all the dancing, like the extended dances while they were blowing out teams.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not like, I guess here's the thing. As long as you win, I don't care. But it does make a situation, I do think it feeds into the idea of you feeling invincible. And feeling invincible can do great things for you, but it can also mean when somebody hits you in the mouth, you are completely shocked.
Well, yeah, and that's something like, what's the Mike Tyson line? Everyone's got a plan until they get hit, punched in the mouth. Right. Like that's, and that is something where, again, I don't put much into these, but if it is, I don't think these games have to be a measuring stick, but if you use it as a measuring stick, right, and you come up short, that can be a good thing. That doesn't mean, uh-oh, well, look, we're not good enough. We just proved it. Like it's something where, all right, you came up short, but you, as long as you learn from mistakes, and that's the biggest thing about the NBA, and that's how teams go from bad to good to great. You learn from your mistakes, and that's why mistakes are okay, and that's why when guys have high turnover games, especially young guys, like that doesn't bother me at all. Just because I look at it, I'm like, as long as you learn from them and you don't average 5 turnovers for your career, like you'll be fine. And that's kind of where I am with this is, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have played him. Okay, they decided they wanted to make a measuring stick, came up short. All right, learn from it. And I think Kerr has proven, at least in this first season, he's pretty good at learning from their shortcomings either this season or the year before or the couple years before, because he's fixed almost every problem they have.
Yeah. I'm really interested in how this the West 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is going to go. The Mavericks magic number or tragic number for being eliminated from contention for anything higher is 1. So they're locked. Thunder aren't going to catch them, and they're not going to catch anybody else. So it's the Mavericks are going to be 7. The Thunder or Pelicans are going to be 8, and it doesn't matter. Either one of them are going to get annihilated. But Golden State will make that one look ugly. It will get out of hand.
That'll be rough.
OKC's defense is not prepared for playing the Warriors,
especially without Serge Ibaka.
The Warriors' defense is like Enes Kanter is a problem for them. I know he's putting up good numbers, and the post play is a great thing. But even when they put him next to Adams, maybe it'll improve if they get Ibaka back and they can put Ibaka in to cover up his shortcomings. But I've seen now 3 games in a row where teams are basically in the first half just putting Kanter through the torture rack.
Oh yeah, I mean he just doesn't know how to play a pick and roll.
Yep.
Or maybe he does, and he's just slow to react. Or there's something there, but it's
He got beat up the floor in transition really badly yesterday, and Adams has taken on such a big rebounding role and defensively he's having such a hard time. Like, and it's a really bad situation if they don't get Ibaka back.
Yeah, but, I mean Adams is a solid defender. I think he'll end up being a good defender, but he's not good enough yet to be able to make up for everyone's mistakes, right? And that's why Serge is so good, because he does make up for everyone's mistakes. So I think when they get Ibaka back, assuming they have Kanter next year and they can kind of cycle through those big men, I think he'll be fine on that team. He'll also have a lesser role because Durant will be around,
right?
But yeah, it's something where the numbers look pretty and it's great for like daily fantasy basketball, but there's a lot of holes with that stat line.
And then, so Houston has the 2 biggest games of its season coming up. They play the San Antonio Spurs on Wednesday, and they play the San Antonio Spurs on Friday.
Yes.
This is really interesting because not only is it like Houston has a chance to essentially lock the division, if they win those 2 games, it's going to be very difficult for Memphis to catch, but with the way the Memphis' schedule is. The flip side of that is that the Spurs, like if the Spurs want to, they can say, you know what, we're going to rest starters versus the Rockets. We're going to stay at 6 because we guarantee we won't play the Rockets, who are a worse matchup for us. And it means that we will in all likelihood play the Clippers or Memphis, conceivably Portland. and San Antonio has to love any of those three matchups. I think they probably like the Clippers the least of them. I wrote about this for Road to the Finals over the weekend, that the Clippers have like this really great – if you're building a team to beat the Spurs, the Clippers actually have a fantastic formula for it. They've become a stellar defensive team. They have a hyper-athletic, huge big man in DeAndre Jordan, and that's pivotal in shutting down Duncan. Like, that's that I cannot express how big this is. Having a guy that can simply reach up and block his turnaround jump shot is really big, and you have to be 7 foot in order to be able to do that. They've got an athletic power forward to attack on the other end. They've got shooters, and they have you have to have an elite point guard. And they've got that in Chris Paul. So on the surface, the Clippers have this really great formula. But good God, the bench.
Well,
right?
the bench and cross-matching, like, can't you just see, all right, we'll have Tony Parker chase J.J. Redick.
Yep.
And then we'll have Danny Green on Matt Barnes. And then we'll put Kawhi on Chris Paul. And I still think Chris Paul can have success against Kawhi Leonard. But Jesus, he has to work to get
that. Yeah, and that wears him down.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all your. If you talk to anybody in the NBA about this stuff, about playing the great players, the same phrase over and over again. You just got to make them work.
Yep.
Because it drags down their efficiency. All you're doing is taking possessions, like a few possessions at a time. You know, it's like, well, he still had 24 points. Yeah, but the last time that he had a great game, he had 24 points on, you know, 7 of 14 shooting, and now he had it on 7 of 18 shooting.
Right.
And that's four more possessions or whatever that you drag away from him. Memphis was looking like a really good lock for the two, went through a dip, had a kind of a resurgence. The Wizards loss was unfortunate. I wrote about this for Playoff Update. It's actually not as bad, because what they really can't do is they can't lose conference games, because they're holding on to a very slim lead for tiebreaker. Houston technically has tiebreaker right now, but with the way it works out, if Memphis is able to pick up the wins that they need, particularly a win versus the Pelicans, they're in good position to get tiebreaker and can still move back into the two. That would be like the ideal situation for Memphis. But not only does Memphis have to get past Houston, the Clippers' remaining schedule is a joke. And this is because they had a really tough schedule when they looked really crappy. A lot of it was because their schedule was an absolute nightmare.
They really have just a ridiculously easy schedule. Two games against – or they just played a game against the Lakers. They have another game against the Lakers.
Game. Well, hold on. Game.
Well, what? Right. Yeah. they were just in the same building as the Lakers. They have another same building – event with the Lakers. I don't know, it's ushers or opponents or whatever. And then the Grizzlies home game will be that'll be a nice measuring stick for them. You know,
it's at home. Tony Allen will not play.
Yeah, and then they play home against Denver, who
they just smoked.
They just smoked, and Denver's weird. Like, you kind of got to worry about them, but I feel like they're also a team. You crush them in the first 6 minutes, they're not coming back, right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, and then a game in Phoenix, who's been a basket case, you know, the second half of the season, and they'll be eliminated from the playoffs by then.
Yeah.
So it's. I mean, there's just nothing.
There's a very good chance they run the table. So I could definitely see the Clippers. Like, if Houston slips up against the Spurs, the Clippers have a great shot at the two.
Which that would be. I mean, just for closing out the season, that would put them at winning 14 of their last 15 heading into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad confidence builder right there.
And Doc really likes what they're at. They were in town for that Denver game, and hearing him talk about the defense, like, he's really pleased with where they're at. And not just because he thinks DeAndre Jordan is, you know, Megatron. I like the fact that Doc capes for his guys.
I mean, that's what you want out of coaches, right? You want the support.
I would much rather have a coach that capes for his guys than the Brian Shaw school of, well, yeah, he had 24 rebounds, but I just really felt like he wasn't all there tonight. What? The Spurs, meanwhile, get the absolutely desperate Oklahoma City Thunder in OKC on Tuesday. The Thunder have to win that. Like, they've got a Thunder in a bind. Then they're at home versus the Rockets, and then they're at Houston. They finish out with the Suns and Pelicans. The Pelicans will need that game, and I just can't see Pop playing starters in the final game of the season, regardless of where the seedings are at. So,
right. Throw a bone to my friend Monty Williams.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, good call.
You never know.
So I could see. I mean, like, theoretically, like, I could see them going like 500 in the stretch, which is impossible because there's five games. But I could see them going 3-2, like winning, like beating the Thunder, splitting with the Rockets and beating the Suns.
I actually think at this point it's not unreasonable to adjust a 500 comment for the Spurs and just mean like, yeah, they're one game over in this stretch.
Right, exactly. By 500, I mean they're better.
Right.
And then Memphis has a really compelling schedule as well. So they play New Orleans on Wednesday. That is a
huge.
I cannot stress this enough. This is an effing monster game. If they win that game, Houston can only tie in division tiebreaker, which means it goes to conference, and Memphis has a significant lead there. And even if Houston were to catch, as long as they don't pass them, Memphis has already locked the third tiebreaker, which is record amongst playoff teams. Memphis already has that under control. So if Memphis can win the Pelicans game, it helps them a lot with tiebreaker scenarios. But then they're at the Jazz, who are tough. A good team now.
Yeah, tough.
They're at the Clippers, and then they're at the Warriors, who they could play starters and want to bomb the Grizzlies out of the building again just to prove a point. And then they play the Pacers on the final night of the season at home, and Indiana will know it's season by then.
Right.
They'll know whether it's making the playoffs or not. So, like, all these teams have winnable games, and all of them have at least one difficult game. But the Clippers is so soft. I'm really, like, looking at it, and I'm just like, I really think the way – and I've changed enough over the last 2 weeks, but I really think that it's going to go Houston, Clippers, Portland, San Antonio, Memphis. I think Memphis is falling back to six.
I mean, that sounds crazy, but it would. I mean, it's only a game and a half difference.
Yes.
Counting
Memphis, yeah.
Like they're a game ahead of San Antonio, who's the sixth, but because of Portland's and division crap,
for like, everyone that says that those games in November they don't matter. Oh, all these games they don't matter. So the Memphis Grizzlies, I have to find the number. The Grizzlies are 16-8 versus Western Conference playoff teams.
Okay.
That's a great number.
Yeah, it's really good.
But if they're so good against Western Conference playoff teams, then where are all the losses coming from? It's because they lost to teams like Boston. It's because they lost to all these teams that they shouldn't lose to. It's because they lost to teams like Milwaukee. Like, those games are what ends up killing you. The Pelicans are in the same spot. If the Pelicans had taken care of the business on the road in the East, we'd be looking at the Thunder and talking about, is this the end of the Durant era?
Like, right.
This would already be over. You have to take care of the games that you should win. And the weird thing is with the West, I actually, as a Memphis guy, I don't mind that. I've been saying this. The Rockets, Clippers, Blazers, and Grizzlies need to get on a conference call. Or no, not the Blazers. The Rockets, Clippers, and Grizzlies need to get on a conference call and just agree to collaborate to get San Antonio into the five.
So you're definitely pro-collusion.
I'm very pro-collusion. And just, sorry, Portland, you're sacrificed. Sacrifice Portland. And then because then what you get then is you don't have to face San Antonio or Golden State until the Western Conference Finals.
I mean, that's
you make them play each other.
Yeah, that's the life.
I'm dead serious is what they need, because if the Spurs wind up in a 3-6, then whoever's 2-3 have got to be terrible. The five is the sweet spot. It's the one that probably will not have home court, depending on what Portland does.
Well, this is turning into like a Hunger Games scenario.
It is.
It really is. Where it's like,
and to be clear, like, just because everyone keeps asking me this, the coaches do not think about this at all. The players are thinking about their game, where they're going, where they're eating, and who they're seeing. That's what they care about. Like, they will deal with whoever comes up in the playoffs when the playoffs get here.
Yeah, I mean,
get paid either way.
They're all aware of it, but it's not something where they're scheming to figure. Like, you may get something where at the end of the season it's like, hey guys, it'd probably be better if we lost this game tonight. Last game of the year. Like, go out there and try, but we're not playing our guys. And okay. And you might get that scenario, but you're not getting a lot of like, all right, well, over the next six games, we really should go 2-4. Like, you're not getting that. No one's doing that. So, all right. You think the Thunder or you think the Pelicans get in? Because I'm looking at the schedule, and it's just...
it's tight.
I mean, the Pelicans have the tiebreaker, so all they have to do is match them, and I think they're only... They're tied in the loss column, right?
They're a half game back.
Yeah, but tied in the loss column.
They're tied in the loss column,
right.
Yeah.
But you look at this, the Thunder, I think if they beat San Antonio on Tuesday, I think they'll win. I think they'll make the playoffs. I think that will be the true test for them, just because after that, you know, Sacramento, Indiana, Portland, Minnesota.
I'm more worried about the Indiana game.
Than San Antonio?
The San Antonio is one that's like, it's out of your control. Like, the tornado will hit you or will not. That's not an appropriate joke for Oklahoma. But
the Pelicans, like, Warriors, Memphis on a back-to-back, you know, Phoenix, whatever, Houston, and then Minnesota, and then a Spurs team that's probably resting. But
look at those last three. So it's Sunday versus the Rockets, Monday versus the Wolves, Wednesday versus the Spurs.
Right.
The Rockets could conceivably lock up the two by Sunday. It would be really tight, but I could see them.
This is going to sound dumb and obvious. I just think, like, you can't give the Pelicans that tie in the standings at any point in the season, in the rest of the season. And what I mean by that is, like, you can't. It's a weird psychological thing, but if you're the Thunder, you can't look at the standings and see them ahead of you because of
just,
a tiebreaker.
Just stay one ahead.
Yeah, like, you just got to keep it. You got to have to let them catch you instead of you going back in the loss column.
Yeah.
Because now, they're tied in the loss column.
The interesting thing is going to be tomorrow night. Does Kerr say, okay, look, we learned our lesson. Let's get ready for the playoffs. I'm resting, guys.
Or does he need to get that taste out of his mouth?
Or does he say, I don't want to face Russell Westbrook in a first-round series? Or right. Does he say, I don't want to face Anthony Davis in a first-round series? You know? Like, the Warriors don't have to care, but it is an interesting question of between two teams that you feel confident you can beat. And the answer will probably be, we want to win as many games as possible, so we're going to go ahead and go out and destroy them.
Yeah, they do have that. There's, like, some weird thing. Like, they'll be the team with the best improvement of any 50-win team in history or something like
that. They just racked up, like, all of these things.
Yeah, it's like, all these, like,
Steve
weird...
Steve Kerr is the best record for a first-year head coach whose name is Steve. The best record for someone who wrote an expletive on his shoes once. The best record for a team that has a guy that went to Michigan State. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of these weird records, but, like, I think that's the last one. But I don't think they're gunning for these things, but I think they think the accomplishments are cool, because, I mean, to be the best of any weird stat is a cool thing. So I do think, like, I could see them caring, like, let's wrap that up, let's get this, and then the next four games, you guys can rest. It's all Festus and Zelly.
Yeah, and the Memphis game really is a coin flip, because Memphis has struggled with New Orleans this year. And they're not playing well, and Tony Allen's out. So that's going to be a really tough one. And then, like, the most Pelicans thing would be if they beat the Warriors and Grizzlies and then lost to the Suns. That would be the most Pelicans thing
right.
that they could do. And then, you know, OKC, I guess I just guess it. OKC's schedule is easier, and OKC has the better – that's tough. I don't know if they have more talent. They're better coached.
Available talent?
They have a better team. But I feel like the Pelicans are playing better right now.
Yeah, I agree with
because,
that.
Because, like, it's not hard to figure out. Like, you look up and, oh, Oklahoma City has now lost 5 of 6.
Yeah, I mean, at San Antonio, at Utah.
They're all tough games. It's, you know, there's
home
not
to
a game
Dallas.
There that you, like,
that Dallas one was brutal. The Dallas one, the Houston one, Houston losses were brutal. I think you can justify the other ones. Well, maybe not 2 days rest between at Utah, even though Utah's been so good in the second half.
And then I worry about the Kings just because if your defense is struggling, that's where George Karl kills you. You know? Like, here's Enes Kanter having to guard Boogie Cousins for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. They just lost to the Pelican. They're weird.
They are weird.
They're such a streaky team.
They're not dangerous, but they're not completely benign either. They're not like the Lakers or Knicks. And then the Pacers... You know, with Paul George, like, and the Pacers are scrapping, man.
Let's go to the East, because this is just...
Everyone that was like, you know, I don't think we need to do any of those sort of, like drastic changes to the playoff structure, like, it gets real bad when you start looking at some of these teams, because it's gotten exaggerated. Like, this is the one I keep coming back to. Detroit's 17 games under 500 and still mathematically alive.
Yeah.
17 games with 10 days to go. and is mathematically alive, they could still make a playoff spot. How? How does this happen? You know, it,
well, you see, when a bad GM and a bad owner really love each other.
Really love each other.
It's funny, too.
You get the fifth seed.
Yeah, we're... Right. We're going to get... Oh, poor Washington. I mean, we have a real shot at three teams in the East playoffs being under 500.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Bucks are under 500.
Yep. And Milwaukee, they lost Orlando, and I was just like, come on.
Yeah.
Their magic number is one. That was the worst part, is their magic number wound up being one. They would have clinched yesterday.
Yeah.
If they just beaten the Magic. And I'm like, Milwaukee, for the love of God.
All right, I'm looking at their schedule. If they don't finish at least 500 the rest of this year, I think we got to get rid of the East.
Okay, that's your line?
Yeah, that's my line. Because they have... All right, they're home to Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't really have much to play for.
Their magic number is one.
Okay, then maybe they want to wrap it up, but they're the two seed. Let's just count that as a loss. Let's say Cleveland beats them. So you're two games under, but then you've got the Knicks, the Nets, the Sixers, the Celtics. You gotta go 3-1 in that stretch.
But if they lock the playoff spot, why would they?
So they don't fall. Can they fall below Brooklyn or?
Let's see what their lead is.
It's 2.5. And a loss to the Nets makes it 1.5.
They have... I only confirm they have tiebreaker.
This is the thing, though. I mean, these teams are garbage.
They are.
Like, this idea that the Nets or the Celtics or the Hornets or the Pacers or the Heat are going to... two of those teams are going to be in the playoffs. Like, these teams are just horrible. And there are plenty of explainable circumstances for why any of these teams are bad, but still have a shot at the playoffs. And I get all that, but my God. I mean, you can't tell me anybody wants... I don't even believe Nets fans want to see this Nets team in the playoffs. The only incentive is you don't lose as bad of a pick when you swap with the Hawks.
Yeah. I was wrong because they play one more time. God, I hate this tiebreaker system. Their magic number... Milwaukee's magic number for the six is 4.
Okay.
They cannot pass Washington.
Cannot pass Washington, but they could fall to 7. Well, I guess they technically could fall to 8.
Yeah, they can fall to 8. but, I mean, like, your magic number is 4. You need 2 wins and 2 Nets losses. And that's what I've been saying about the East. Like, you have to count on anyone that's below you in the East going at least 500 the rest of the way. Like, you have to say, basically, like, the teams below you will not go on a win streak because they can't, because they're all terrible.
Right.
But yeah, like Brooklyn. I mean, I'm gonna get off Brooklyn's case. I've been on him all year. I compared him to... I was trying to be nice, but I compared him to a subway rat in power rankings.
That's nice.
It was. It was meant to be a compliment. Yeah, they're tough.
Right.
They're survivors.
Sure.
They're not gonna give up. But they're still...
Mikhail Prokhorov just sold the third rail, so they don't have to worry about hitting that and dying.
Right. They... But, I mean, yeah, a 2-7 versus... I mean, God, a 2-7 Brooklyn Cavs series?
Congratulations on your second round appearance, Cleveland.
I mean... Yeah, and then... I like Boston. I think that they're fun to watch. I really love
watching Brad Stevens coach. And they're a scrappy little team.
I feel like the Hawks versus the Celtics will be a really great first half series.
Sure.
Like, those first halves could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But... there's going to be a run in the second half where Atlanta's going to go on like an 18-4 run, and they'll clock them. And then the only one that is kind of interesting to me is Milwaukee-Chicago. That's the only one that I kind of get a little bit like, hmm.
The Bulls are going to slaughter them. I think the Bucks can win a game, but this Bulls are getting healthier. Milwaukee's difficult. Like, I don't think they're a pushover necessarily, but there's just no scoring on that team. And I know Chicago...
The thing is that the Bulls' offense looks good for most of the time, but it does have nights where it sputters and dies like that old Volvo again.
Oh, certainly. That's why I think, like, the Bucks get a game out of it. They get a win. But for the most part, like... I mean, maybe Derrick Rose coming back, assuming he comes back.
It's pretty much Powell. That's my whole thing, is because they, one of the games that they slaughtered them in was Powell's whatever 40-plus point game. Like, when he was just went off.
Yeah.
If Powell has a dominant series, then Chicago wins in four. But if Powell struggles and they go at him and they attack him and Rose isn't 100%.
I guess how much will Rose screw up what they've got going? That's a question.
Yeah. The other thing I thought was interesting today, yesterday watching the Cavs, was the Cavs fronted them on every post possession and the Bulls couldn't beat it.
I mean, they don't really – I mean, aside from Noah and Powell, they don't really have passers on that team.
Right. That's the thing. Well, and that's the problem, is Rose is out and Heinrich's out. And I know how Bulls fans feel about Kirk Heinrich. I'm not going to argue about Kirk Heinrich anymore. At least he can throw an entry pass.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Brooks literally can't see over his defender.
Right.
You know? So you wind up in trouble there. Like, when they can't get the ball in the post, it's time – because it gets them down the clock. Because the Bulls keep trying to get the set in motion. That was my thing yesterday. So I was like, give it up. Like, if you can't make the pass or not.
Yeah, if you can't make the pass, swing it.
If you can't get the ball to Taj Gibson when he's posting J.R. Smith,
can we take a minute and just appreciate the stat line that J.R. Smith had?
Yep.
8 of 17 from the field, 8 of 17 from three-point range.
There's nothing I can say.
Whether it's good or bad, I love a guy who takes 17 threes in a game and only 17 threes in a game.
Yeah. And I mean, credit to him actually for that.
Good looks.
Yeah, because like he didn't make things too hard. Like, he didn't catch the ball and then thought, "No, I'm going to slow this down and then dribble and then pull up."
No, he was shooting before he caught it.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm just going to shoot." If he plays like this, if he is able to play like this into late April and May, and then completely new thing.
I can hear you stepping on the tack that you've put in your shoe to keep your emotions in check.
Then the Cavaliers will be very difficult to stop. J.R. Smith can swing the title for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
What a world we live in.
You know what I keep thinking of, actually? No kidding. I keep thinking of Deshaun Stevenson. That's who I keep thinking of.
Yeah.
Because Deshaun Stevenson was a joke before, and he was a joke after. And on that Mavericks team, he started, he played LeBron, he was crucial to their success. Like, they let him go, and never, like, he was never heard from again. Except in the lore of the ATM machine in the kitchen.
Sure. I wonder if he still has that. He's got to still have that ATM machine, right?
Now it's one of those change machines.
Oh, I was thinking like maybe it's a red box now.
Right. He really did. He swung the finals. He was huge for that 2011 Mavericks team. He was gigantic. Him and Peja were both huge.
Yeah.
So this can happen. I'll tell you what. If he has no problems, here's what I will believe. If he has no problems going out in either Toronto or Atlanta, I'll believe. If he's not hung over for a single game.
Isn't that amazing that you don't look at schematics? You don't look at defensive rotations or whether he's getting good shots? It's simply if J.R. Smith can handle the nightlife in a series.
Yep.
That's why home court was so important for Cleveland. They won't get it against the Hawks. You got to have those four games in Cleveland.
J.R. Smith walks in. There's a radio playing in the background. Cavaliers win game two versus Atlanta. And then J.R. Smith walks in. Yeah, hi. Do I have any messages? Yes, Mr. Smith. You have 745 messages from the Gold Club.
I think that you'll actually believe that he can be a positive force for this Cavaliers team if they win a third straight title with him on the roster. I think after the third straight title, then you'll be like, okay, he might work here.
Yeah, I mean, look, in all seriousness, it really, like, there has, if he didn't have his history, I would be talking about how J.R. Smith is the X factor and he can swing the title in the East. Like, I really would be. If it wasn't for 10 years of history of him doing pretty much this exactly, of looking awesome in March and April, and then breaking plays and being a problem when the playoffs come, And he's older. Eventually, you do get tired of doing the same stuff unless you're Michael Jordan and Charles Oakley. Like, eventually, you get tired of doing the same stuff, you know? So maybe he's done. And if he is, awesome. Good for him. Everyone does talk about, like, the biggest thing is Cavs fans are like, it's the LeBron factor. And I'm like, that's a two-way street. That I have a concern of JR being like, come on, man. Come on, fam. We got to go out and celebrate the land. Like, I wonder, do they just talk in hashtags to each other, do you think?
Has JR ever used the land in an Instagram post?
I wonder.
There's no way. Because it's not a thing. It wasn't a thing before LeBron re-signed there.
Right.
That's why I don't believe it's a thing. This idea that, oh no, we've always said the land. You haven't said the land. We would have seen it before this.
They got upset when I suggested that over the summer, so I will not go down that road again. But yeah, okay, so, and then... I guess Toronto's pretty happy with where they're at, despite their looking pathetic.
They've got to, I mean, obviously, I think they'd rather be in a 3-6 against the Bucks, right? But a 4-5 against the Wizards isn't terrible just because both these teams are a mess.
They're so new to the playoffs that this team still believe, or their fans still believe in regular season meetings mattering. And so they won the season series versus the Wizards and handled them pretty well. So they feel really good about being able to beat the Wizards.
Yeah, but playoff Whitman. You get to playoff Whitman. It's a whole different game.
I'm worried about playoff Nene, in all seriousness.
Granted, Noah was struggling with all kinds of injuries last year and just overplayed beyond his physical capabilities. But Nene destroyed Noah last year.
Destroyed him. Like, there was a lot of things you could tell that Noah was physically struggling with, and a lot of it was just basketball. Like, it was just like Nene just outplayed Joakim Noah at basketball. And then I look at them and I'm like, who are you starting at power? Like, you're putting you think Amir Johnson is going to take Nene? That's the plan?
All right, I don't put anything into regular season matchups, but I'm looking at, like, it was a 2-point win or a 2-point loss to Toronto, and Washington had a 4-point overtime loss to Toronto.
Ooh,
aren't those basically coin flips?
Not in the minds of We the North, but okay.
I mean, I'm not trying. I guess I'd probably pick Toronto in the series. I have no idea.
A lot is that they don't want to face. They're more worried about facing Kidd for a second year in the 3-6. That worries them a little bit. And it's also, they just had to be realistic that, because I thought looking at the schedule they were going to make it, and then they just lost to all the bad teams.
Yeah. So we're feeling pretty confident Chicago wraps up the 3. I know they're only a game up, but.
Yeah, I think they'll pull it out. I mean, Toronto's got tiebreaker because they won the division.
Yeah.
But I think the Bulls hold on.
God, that division thing's so stupid.
It's the worst.
It's the
absolute worst. Because what would happen in the West is Portland realistically would be looking at – Portland would be the 6. And so whoever's in the 3 would be ideal.
Also, I'm on this thing now, and it's not the first time anyone's thought of it, but this I don't want tiebreaker deciding an 8 seed. Give me a 1-game playoff. Like, if the Pelicans and Thunder were tied after the last day of the season for the 8 seed, I don't want just a playoff. A 1-game playoff would be so fun. Like, can you imagine Russ versus Anthony Davis in a 1-game playoff for the 8 seed? We can't work that into the 2-day break and then have them play the 1 seed on Sunday.
I wonder how much of it is they're worried about having too long of a break before the playoffs start, like you're going to lose momentum. But I just keep thinking, like, dude, like, let's have a week before the playoffs start, and yeah, let's do the play-ins. I think that's a really good idea. Ken Berger's idea was a little interesting. It was a little complicated, but he had an interesting one of basically, like, however many are tied, like if it's 7, 8, and then 9 and 10 or even 9, 10, 11 are all tied. They all play in the playoff and you work it out.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you finagle the schedule to where Monday night is the last game of the season, is the last day of the season, and then you have
Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah, even Tuesday through Friday, playoffs start on Saturday.
Yeah.
But then you have wiggle room to either everyone rests or you get your little 1-game playoffs and all that stuff, you know?
Yep.
Maybe that's the way to do it. So you got to open the playoffs on a weekend.
Yeah, you have to start on Saturday.
Yeah, so maybe that's what, yeah, I don't know.
What's the first round matchup, and I know we'll talk about it next week, but what's the first round matchup that you are preemptively most excited about? What's the one that makes you go, ooh?
Man. I guess it's hard to know because of what it's going to be in the West. But as of right now, I don't mean to do this to you. I'm really intrigued by the Grizzly Spurs 3-6 right now.
Well, it's been good, Zach.
I mean, all right. If the Grizzlies, if it's Grizzlies Clippers, I would love that. If it's Spurs Rockets, I would love that. You know, I'm trying to figure out a way I would get really excited for a Portland first round series. Maybe Portland Dallas could be really compelling.
Man, look, I keep going back to this. We thought they were dead last year.
I don't think they have zero chance. I'm just trying to think of like, what's the fun matchup for me when it comes to them? Not like what can they compete in. I think they'll be competitive no matter who they play.
I feel like Blazers Clippers could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, Chris Paul versus Damian Lillard, LaMarcus against Blake Griffin. Like, yeah, that could be really fun.
Yeah, like Rolo can battle with DeAndre to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Batum versus, you know, Batum would spend a lot of time guarding Paul.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting. You've got Kamen versus Spencer Hawes.
Oh, man.
You got Steve Blake versus Austin Rivers.
There's so many uniform regulations. If Steve Blake is wearing Austin Rivers' face in the second half, like, will he get fined for that?
I was talking to Dan Wicky about this when he was in town. I can't believe how bad this bench is because their starters are so good. They're so dominant. But God, just spend, like, they really did. They're rolling out lineups. I know part of it's like they were in a blowout, but like last night they rolled out a lineup that was Austin Rivers, Lester Hudson, and, you know, Hudson's just playing because of whatever, because Crawford's out. But even then, like, Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, Hedo Turkoglu, Spencer Hawes, Glenn Davis.
I honestly didn't even know Lester Hudson was on the team.
Yeah. Playing well, too.
I like him.
Give him the old D-League try.
Yeah.
He's been useful for the limited times. And then, yeah, the East is really hard to get excited about. Like, if Miami had made it, Miami would have been really interesting.
Yeah, that could have been fun. I mean, they lose Tuesday night, they've got to lose out, right? Like, you lose to the Hornets Tuesday night, you're not done. But just for the interest of keeping your pick because it's top 10 protected, I mean, they're right now they would be the 10th pick if no one jumps ahead of them in the lottery.
Yeah,
they keep it if it's top 10. You lose to Charlotte, you move up to 9th. You kind of need that buffer. So, I mean, it really is make the playoffs or keep your pick.
I just think it's – I just want mercy on them because they're so hurt.
It's one guy after another going down.
Dang and Beasley could be out today for, like, the remainder of the season.
The Beasley one looked really nasty. Like, he walked and everything, but his knee bent in a weird way.
I just saw this pop up. Hot, hot hoops. Mario Chalmers claims he doesn't know his role on the team anymore.
Yeah, sure, why not?
That sounds right.
That's the time of year to discuss that.
Yeah, exactly. Great timing, as always. Rockets Mavericks is really compelling to me.
That could be really good.
I still feel like Dallas is a little more dangerous than people are giving them credit for.
Oh, I agree. I think Dallas is built for the playoffs. Like, maybe they still lose in the first round, but I just think that they're, you know, that roster has a little bit more balance than what they previously had, and that's good. And then on top of that, you have Rick Carlisle coaching in a 7-game series. Like, I'll take those odds.
Dallas is the anti-Raptors.
Sure.
What do we expect out of the Raptors? I want to, because I obviously have I'm stepping on that tack again. I am going to contain myself about the recent.
I mean, you got to
4-month happenings of the.
Not that it would make it would make a huge difference, but not that it would necessarily change anything. But Lowry being out certainly screws
it's
them.
Big. Like that I keep wanting to rag on them for the losses that they've had, but their losses have been basically because Lowry's been out.
Yeah, and Lowry was bad before he went down.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, I mean, I don't know that you realistically expect him to be bad for the for the extent of his career from now on, right? Like, I mean, he's so good, and he's the most important player on that team. And so him being out is huge. At the same time, God, that team's been a disaster since January 1st. I mean, just an absolute disaster. Defensive coach who can't coach that team into being even a decent defensive team right now.
They're not talented. I will continue to wave this flag.
Well, that's the thing is they're deep, but they're deep with like
skill.
Yeah,
it's. What do you think? You know what it's honestly like? They got a kitchen. They got a really good kitchen. Like, Gravis Vasquez can make you soup. He's a good soup guy. But you can't ask him to grill.
Yeah.
You know? You've got, like, Patrick Patterson is an excellent saucier. Can't grill.
Tyler Hansbrough has busted a sewage pipe. next to the grill. And that you just can't have that.
You know? And then, like, Lou Williams is the guy that is just is trying every new – he thinks it's Iron Chef every night.
Right. Lou Williams is the best pastry man on the planet, but he wants a chance at making pasta.
Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, and you've got two really good all-around – you've got a really great head chef and sous chef in Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan.
But they can't find their knives.
But they can't find their knives. You know, and meanwhile, like, there's zero, like, there's just, it's, and the bigger problem is really that the room's full of oxygen, so every time they light a fire, it's just an inferno. That's their defense. Yeah, I mean, Casey's probably going to get canned if they have a first-round flameout, and I just keep looking at him being like, this is the roster, man.
That's not, yeah, because they, I mean, they really did overperform last year.
That's the problem, is they came in with expectation, and that first month of the season was the worst thing that could have happened to them.
Yeah.
And because it set the expectation for them being – like, because this is a big thing. Like, expectations are so huge. Because, if going into the year, even, like, Memphis is probably going to wind up as, you know, the fifth or the sixth seed. Most Grizzlies fans would be like, awesome. But now it's like, this sucks. We had a shot at the title, and now we suck. This is awful. It's like, it's the West. What do you want to do? You know? I actually have, I very much want Memphis to not play San Antonio just because I've seen it. That's the only reason I don't want to see it. I just feel like I know, I don't want to go through a really exciting season and then have this team that's been so fun to watch go out in a way in which I know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
That sucks to watch. It's really frustrating when you're like, and then they double Zebo, and then they miss the three, and they rebound.
You know what? Memphis-Portland could be a fun series.
I would love that. That'd be great. Zebo back in Portland?
That would be fun. I could get into that.
Yeah. I think the Grizzlies would struggle. Like,
those are some good matchups.
Yeah, like Conley I think would struggle with Dame because he's so quick. And
Tony Allen on Lillard?
Mm-hmm. Batum battling with Jeff Green would be really kind of interesting. I think those two would face each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
Jeff would wind up facing LaMarcus, and LaMarcus would toast him because he's so much bigger. You know, Rolo versus Marc Gasol. Stotts versus Jaeger is a really interesting matchup. Like, that's really compelling.
Yeah, all right, I could get into that.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen, but no. Let's get that going.
Yeah, that would be ideal. But it could, again, if San Antonio decides that they're going to go ahead and just rest play. Like, if they decide to concede the two games at Houston, they'll fall back to six.
Yeah.
That's it. Real quickly, national championship game tonight.
Yes.
There's one game. Brooklyn's favored, by the way, in this one game tonight for the NBA.
Brooklyn is favored against the Blazers?
Yeah, by six.
Is Lillard sitting out?
I have not heard anything.
Oh, Billy King revenge game for the whole Gerald Wallace, Damian Lillard trade.
Yeah.
Go get your revenge, Billy King.
I'm not sure what Brooklyn's version of revenge looks like, but...
Yeah... I don't know, getting sold. Maybe having a new jersey tonight to unveil, a new brand.
His revenge is he's gonna hemorrhage all of Portland's assets and put them into debt. yeah, I think the Blazers in that game, by the way.
Yeah, I'll take the Blazers.
The national championship game, for the NBA perspective, you got Frank the Tank and Sam Decker.
I like the Sam Decker. I like him a lot.
Versus Justice Winslow and Jahlil Okafor.
Justice Winslow might be my second favorite player in the draft.
He is awesome
behind Towns.
So much to like about him.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, well, one, someone in the top six should be promising him.
Yeah.
A spot so he doesn't have to do workouts. But even if he does workouts, I think he'll destroy. Like, I can't imagine too many agents would want their guy in a workout against him.
Oh, we're really excited to come in and prove to you what we can do. Oh, good. If you come up against Justice Winslow. Just got the text.
Just tweaked his ankle tomorrow. Just tweaked his ankle tomorrow. Can't do it.
He's got an ankle tweak scheduled for tomorrow.
What do you thought? I'm interested what your thoughts are on Frank Kaminsky as an NBA player. I'm just not high on him.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of.
I can see him being a really good role player.
Yeah, like he'll get minutes. You know, like Kelly Olynyk gives good minutes.
Yeah, like I like his prospects, I guess, better than Olynyk's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough to say. I think, in large part, I think I need to watch more video of him to really get a sense of what he can do.
Sure.
Especially defensively, but. I would say I don't think he, like, I tend to go pretty hard on the guys in his type of situation. I was like, there's no way Jimmer's going to be good. There's just no way. I was higher on Doug McDermott, and I still want to see how Doug McDermott works out. But I feel like Tank's.
It's weird because he's agile, but I don't know that he's athletic enough to do what he's good at.
I'd rather have Cody Zeller.
Ooh. I might take Kaminsky there.
Yeah,
that's a tough one though.
Yeah,
are we only comparing him to white players?
Or
are
yeah.
We, okay.
So, all
right.
Apologize. I will say I am not as familiar as I need to be.
Yeah, I like. Have you watched Decker a lot?
Yeah, I watched Decker a ton.
I like him a lot.
I love Decker. Yeah. I think he's gonna be great.
Good athlete, good defender, good offensive player. Steps up, all those cliches. I like him.
Yeah, I think he's got big shot making ability. I was really surprised when he slid so much this year. I was super high on him last year. I did a whole breakdown of him.
Yeah, see, I wasn't that high on him last year, but this year I'm in.
Yeah, he slid down the rankings to start the year, and then has really come up obviously huge in the tournament.
Yeah,
just fantastic. I'm trying to remember what I wrote about him last year. Looking it up.
And then Okafor, Okafor has looked good against small guys and looked okay against bigger guys. And so I'm interested to see how he does against, like, you know, Hayes and Kaminsky and those guys tonight.
I am looking forward to the raging debate of Towns versus Okafor over the, like, because it's about to go, it's already been crazy. It's about to go insane.
It really is. To me, I just don't see how you don't go with Towns.
I'm in the same place.
I just think he's so much better. And I think the idea is like, oh, well, Okafor is like a great post player, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I think Towns could be equally as good if given the same opportunities, like at worst. And he's a much better defender. He's like an eat-your-face defender.
Yeah. Where'd you put the Kentucky guys?
I mean, to me, Towns is easily the top guy. And then outside of that, I like Willie Cauley-Stein, if he's not a top five pick, someone screwed up.
I have a supernova hot take that I'm debating whether I should release into the wild.
Ooh.
It would make people go insane.
Take on me.
I think he's going to be better than Noel.
Oh, I don't hate that at all.
I really do. I think Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be better than Nerlens Noel. That now that's one that like you could look back and it's just going to look absolutely stupid.
Yeah.
In just 2 years, it is entirely possible. I just really love WCS's game.
To me, like let's say the Lakers have the fourth pick.
Yeah.
And Okafor, Towns, and D'Angelo Russell are off the board. I know this like we're intrigued by Moutier and everything. I just don't see how like based on what you have with the Lakers. And the little assets they have, like, how do you not just say, all right, we're going to take care of our defense by putting Willie Cauley-Stein as the fourth pick, and he's going to protect the rim for us for the next 15 years?
We're going to put Willie Cauley-Stein next to Julius Randle, and, like, that's our guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a front court to build around.
I think, from what I hear, the problem is going to be Moody is going to murder workouts.
I'm sure he's very good. I just look at it as the league is so point guard saturated.
Yeah.
Like, you can go get a point guard.
Yeah.
Go shore up your defense with the role that's becoming the most important thing in basketball right now. that shot blocking, rebounding big man to anchor everything and kill in pick and roll. Like, I think Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be a better version of Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
And I think very highly of Tyson Chandler. I think Stein's incredible.
Yeah, I'm really big on him. I think he's terrific.
What do you think of the Harrison twins?
I like them. I still I like guys that are willing to take big shots.
I do like that about them.
You know, and it's tough just because I guess here's my thing, and I know this is overly simplistic. I look at how many good Kentucky guards there've been. Like, who was the last Kentucky guard for under Calipari to not be a good pro? Like, Archie Goodwin is good. Like, Archie Goodwin
will be when he gets minutes, he'll be good.
Yeah, it's crazy. They lose defensively. They lose their minds a little bit in terms of they play too much off ball, but that's a rookie thing, so I think it's okay. Their athleticism isn't through the roof, but I feel like they're still really skilled. And I keep looking at point guards, and this is how I am with Michael Carter Williams. This is how I am with everyone. I'm just like, I want to know how they're going to be in 4 years, not how they're going to be in their first two.
Right.
You know? And you can be a really different player by then.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else? What do you think of Oubre?
Oh, I love Oubre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's another one of those Kansas guys that just not used properly in college, which is fine. Like, you don't need to build college programs around one guy. So I'm fine with that. I think he's going to kill at the next level. Yeah, I like him a lot. Like, I really like the idea of him going to Orlando. Really like
what
the idea
of him
going to Orlando.
What are some good player comps for Kaminsky other than the four white guys I
Oh, how about? Well, no, I don't know about that.
Because I was like, he doesn't really have the athleticism and wingspan range of LaMarcus.
What about like a David West type guy?
Maybe.
I mean, he's obviously not like the tank that he is, but
ironically,
yeah, right. I didn't even mean that. But yeah, like maybe. Maybe that type of a power forward.
He is really agile.
Yeah, he's really agile.
Would you have him top 10?
No. Actually, well, I don't know. Because for me, I'm starting to inch towards, like, I'd rather have Looney out of UCLA, and I'd rather have Trey Lyles than Kaminsky. But I could be talked into him over those two.
I like Looney very much. I also like Stanley Johnson.
Oh, I love Stanley.
Yeah, I also really like Miles Turner.
I'm not sold on Turner, and I can't figure out why. There's something about him where I'm just like, eh, I'm not projecting him as like a really good player. But I need to watch more.
You know, I know who I love is who I think is gonna be a steal is DeLon Wright.
Oh, he's fantastic.
I love that kid.
Yeah.
I'm in on him.
Yeah, and I love Jerry and Grant as a combo guard off the bench.
We're gonna be talking about Montrezl Harrell being suspended for a game in like 2 years when he's like the tough ass dude on team, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I love him.
I think he can be good. I think he'll be capable. But
yeah, I love Devin Booker out of Kentucky.
Yeah,
he's gonna be a real player at the shooting guard position.
I was joking about this with a GM 2 weeks ago. He was like, "Well, who would you?" He's like, "If you had all five first round picks, who would you take?" And I was like, "I would take the Kentucky starting five." that's what I would do.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Man, Hezonja is getting a ton of buzz.
I gotta watch more of him.
He is. You're gonna man. You are gonna love Mario Hezonja. You are gonna love that guy. He is 100% Harper. He is team talkers.
So he's like a really good Rudy Fernandez?
Actually, it's not a bad comp. He has the most attitude of any European player I have ever seen.
I'm in. Even more than like Mirza?
Yeah, way more.
Wow. Okay.
He literally makes up shots and moves just to see if he can pull it off.
That I like. That's a Larry Bird quality.
He's a bad dude, and he dunks on folks. He goes at them. He's gonna be picked really high, whether he translates or not. You know me. By the way, I just had to say how hilarious it is. There is at least a 50% chance that the Nuggets starting five next year is European.
Who would it be? Danilo, Yusuf.
Danilo, Yusuf, Jokic, Laverne.
Oh, yeah.
And then I could see, even if Laverne comes off the bench, I could see it being Yuka, Jokic, Gallo, Hezonja. And then I could see them signing a point guard. Like, I could see them signing, like, Beno Udrih.
A little known fact. Gary Harris, full-blood Russian. Little known fact.
I'm dead serious. I could very much, like, they love all of the Euros. Like, they are the most pro-Euro team in the league. They are more pro-Euro than the Spurs.
Wow.
It could definitely happen. This is the team I cover. This is the team that I go see regularly.
That's some kind of irony.
It's some kind of punishment. That's what it is. Also, I can't say anything bad about those guys. Like, Nurkic is a really funny dude in the locker room. He's just a really funny, like, he's got a really good disposition when he's not screwing with people on the floor.
Hezonja has more attitude than Nurkic?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Nurkic just likes messing with you.
All right, I got to start penning my, hey, Hezonja should be your number one pick.
Seriously, just.
All right, I'm gonna spend the rest of the afternoon watching him on Synergy.
Yeah, pull up the tubes and watch him, because he's gonna be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, you know what, Matt? Enjoy the national championship game.
Oh, I won't watch.
Oh, I know you won't. Well, I will, because it's on CBS.
I'll have it on.
Your number one network.
I'll have it on to boost the ratings. Yeah. That actually works, but let's assume it does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're totally a Nielsen ratings family, right?
I'm so bummed Kentucky's not in it. I'm really.
I did want that storyline. Just the going for 40-0, going for the title.
I feel really bad for those kids. It's like you lost one game all year, and yet like you're a disappointment. Yeah.
Towns versus Okafor would have been fun.
Yeah, and it's like, and like Decker's really good, and Kaminsky's really good, and that coach is awesome. I always wind up feeling these games like, oh, so it's like a real basketball team versus like the future CPAs of America. Okay.
Oh.
That's. Which is better than, like, Sports Blogger of America, you know? They'll make more money than I will.
I could see Kaminsky foregoing an NBA career for a sports blogging career.
I could see that. He seems like you'd like it.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be in for that. All right, Matt, well, enjoy your night, and enjoy the Blazers-Nets showdown at Barclays, and I will talk to you later.
Thanks, Zach.